T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Now Foles gets hit, doesn't see it coming, loose ball, Bills scoop it up at the 35-yard line, going back the other way. Here they go, it is Bernard the rookie, inside the 20, inside the 15, 10, touchdown! Touchdown Buffalo, first one of the preseason.
John Murphy on the call, one preseason game down, two to go, Saturday against the Broncos, and then they wrap the preseason on the road against Carolina. So that'll be the Bills preseason schedule for you as we gear up towards the opener in L.A. On the Wester Hotline with us is Sal Capaccio. His appearance brought to you by Outlet Liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the best place to buy a case. What's your outlet? Sal, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
We're all right. It was a beautiful, beautiful scene at the stadium on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Perfect weather day. And I'd imagine it was nice to be back on the sideline in front of Bills Mafia.
Oh, it was great. It was a great atmosphere. It was great weather, like you said. Just lots of smiling kids in the stands. Always the case with preseason, obviously, but just fans in general. You know, when it started, looked around like, yeah, it's not as busy as I thought. But I think people were enjoying themselves and kind of the reunion, so to speak, as you know how that goes, right, Jeremy?
Absolutely.
You see people you haven't seen for the first time. So by the time the first quarter got rolling around, it was pretty packed in there. I looked at the official attendance. It was 66,000 official paid attendance. I don't think 68,648 is the official. I don't know exactly like how many through the turnstiles, but it was a nice crowd. It was really good. And I will tell you, it went from one of the most boring preseason games I've ever seen and been a part of to one of the most exciting by the fourth quarter.
Yeah. And then a walk-off win. I mean, you know, you can't ask for much more.
Great. And then about 9 in a row, right? 9 in a row is becoming a bit of a story. McDermott had a little fun with that afterwards in the post-game presser. He was kind of asked about it, and he's like, you know, I don't want to talk about it. You're going to jinx it here. But he was laughing, right, because it's preseason.
Sure.
So they're aware of it. They know that.
But you got to ask them if they're chasing the Ravens, you know?
I know, right? I know, 21 in a row, which is incredible. And so I think that's interesting, though, that the Bills and Ravens both have this preseason winning streak. I brought it up with Sean McDermott in our radio production meeting, and I asked him if he thinks there's anything to that. Like, is it just coincidence? What is it? And you know, he said, like, it matters the guy's playing, right? And that's the kind of player they bring in here, that it matters to them. Now, I know, like, we can go back to the Doug Marrone era getting mad about, you know, a preseason game. That's not what he means. It's, you know, when those guys take the field, football matters to them. They want to do their best. They want to win the game. It's not outright, yeah, sure, you're trying to win, but you're not, oh, my God, we do anything to try and win the game. But that's the kind of people they brought into this organization. And he kind of explained it that he thinks that's pretty much where it comes from. I will also say, I think both these organizations, the Bills and Ravens, do a very good job of evaluating talent. So when you get to the third and fourth quarters, you're going to have better players on the field. If you're playing your threes against their threes, I think in general the Bills and the Ravens would have better threes than most teams. You look around and look at their rosters, I think they do a good job of that, and I think that partly explains it.
Sal on the Wester Hotline, Jeremy and Joe with you here. You can give us a call. You can ask Sal a question, give a comment, 803-0550. All right, Sal, so the game, let's pretty much go how it went. The opening drive for the Bills looks pretty good. We see some of the good, some of the bad. I thought the first guy that flashed, that popped the whole day, was Zach Moss. And your voice was ringing.
Jeremy.
Your voice was ringing in my ears. Like those expecting his decline, you know, that's been overstated. You're not surprised to see him flash. He's looked like that all camp.
I'm glad you brought that up, and thank you. I appreciate that, because I remember when I tweeted that and I said The football death of Zach Moss has been greatly over-exaggerated. That's how I put it. And it's right. And this is what I've seen from him at camp. Zach Moss, to me, looks fresh and healthy. I'm thinking back a year ago, and I'll tell you this, ever since like this camp has gone on, and I've said that about people, and other people have made that observation, I've heard from people who said he just wasn't healthy last year. Like, he was recovering from that injury in the playoff game, remember? He had off-season surgery last year after he hurt his ankle in that playoff game against the Colts. From everything I'm gathering, that was really bothering him all of last year in some way. It doesn't mean it's outright bothering you, but you know what I mean. Like, you're just never completely there. You're not 100%, even if you don't feel the effects necessarily, and that impacts you. And everybody I've talked to about this has said the exact same thing, which is, he's finally fully a year removed from that. Eric Wood can tell you. Eric Wood broke his leg. He said, yes, even though you think you're there, you're not quite. It takes you a longer time than what you think. Because once you get in the season, there's no more rehabbing, really. You're practicing. You're playing. I think Zach Moss looked really good. I gave him an arrow up. The cutback and then showing speed to get to the outside, I think, was a really good sign, because we already know he brings a little bit of that power element.
So where do you think we're headed if this continues with Moss? If he continues to look healthy and he's, like you said, bouncing it outside and showing speed, are we headed for the Bills doing something that they've really never done, which is getting three different running backs involved in their offense?
I think so, Joe, yeah. I think Zach Moss is probably a part of this team on game day. You know, we've talked, you and I, a lot about, well, sure, Zach Moss makes the team, but does he get a jersey? I think he's making a case clearly to do that. He's making a case to be the number two running back with James Cook sprinkled in, and then let's see how it shakes out. To me, it might be, how about, I'll go back to last year's term I used to use, running back by game plan. Now, maybe not so much of, you know, a committee, like a backfield committee, but I think in certain situations, maybe in certain games, you will see more of Zach Moss than James Cook. And in certain games, you'll see more of James Cook than Zach Moss, maybe depending on what that game calls for in the different script. I think Devin Singletary is clearly, to me, the number one guy on this team. He's going to be the main running back. Now, and I don't want it to go, and people think I'm diminishing what James Cook's role is going to be. I think he's still going to have that role. I think maybe that you're going to just see a little bit more of Zach Moss than maybe we thought we would.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. Also from the starting offense, Sal, Case Keenum. You know, they move the ball all the way down the field on their opening drive. They go for it on fourth down and don't get it. And then from there, turnovers start to plague them. An interception, a fumble. Let's start with Keenum specifically. We had a caller ask how concerned we should be about Keenum. My answer is I'm not very concerned. It wasn't necessarily a great outing, but has he shown anything in camp that would give you great concern? Or is he looking like, you know, your standard backup quarterback for the most part?
Yeah, I'm not concerned about Case Keenum. I want people to remember that the Bills had a very patchwork offensive line. And on top of that, they went against the number one Colts defense for several series. So there's a lot that's out there. Now, that said, I don't think Keenum looked great. I don't think he played great. The first interception is not on him to me. One off Jameson Crowder's hands. The second interception is clearly on him. He also had the fumble. Case Keenum does two things I really like. He has three, actually. Gets rid of the ball quickly. Guys, he has a quick release. That's really nice. Number two, he has extra strong arm. I mean, he's not the biggest guy, but he has a strong arm. And the third thing is he's fairly mobile. Like, he can move back there. And I think that really helps out the Bills. Like, I'm not concerned. It's a preseason game when they're not showing a ton. He didn't have a full offensive line. They're going against a really good Colts front seven. They're starting defense. So, no, I'm not concerned. Now, that said, I'd like to see him play better next game. I'd like to see, hopefully, with a better offensive line, I'd like to see Keenum play better. There is nothing in my mind that moves me off of he is the team's backup quarterback here. Not Matt Barkley, who to me is most likely going to be a practice squad guy. Not anybody else from the outside. It's Case Keenum. Now, if we have another game next week like we had this week, maybe I would definitely start entertaining that conversation a little bit more. But then it would be just become simply where Barkley and Keenum fall in line in this team. It's not anything about Keenum not being here. That to me, they have their three quarterbacks, however that goes.
On Khalil Shakir, who looked pretty good, Sal, not trying to tamp down excitement over him, I guess the thing I want to ask is, was it just a function of he was, I mean, the best receiver playing, right? You know, we're not seeing Diggs and Davis out there featured too much, or McKenzie. So it's an offense that's had a lot of success getting the ball to receivers, and he's the guy that got the attention against Indianapolis and looked every bit the part of a guy that can play.
Yeah, this is a guy that, to me, and I've said from when I started watching him in camp, I don't think he's ever going to be the number one receiver with all these numbers in the league, but I think he's going to play a long time and be a solid receiver in the NFL. And I think he showed why. He gets open. He catches the ball. He just makes plays for you. He's there. You know, five catches on five targets, by the way, for 92 yards. Let all receivers. To answer your question, Jeremy, I do think it's partly because of that. Like, he was the guy, right? I mean, you don't have all these other weapons on the field. But at the same time, he was the guy. And he made the plays. And he got open. He did exactly what he was expected to do. I'm sure we'll talk about Isaiah Hodgins here in a minute. But I think that the Bills, I think for a lot of concern the fans have had about the back end of the wide receiver depth chart, I think you got to come away from Saturday night feeling a lot better about that. You know what I mean? Like thinking, okay, well, what do they have if they besides Diggs and Davis? I think we saw that they have a group that is coming along and can handle it. And I think that they have some good young receivers that they can rely on, and that is a very nice feeling to have after some of the concerns we had earlier in camp.
How does Hodgins make the team? Because McDermott singled him out specifically and had very, very high praise for him, which if the head coach is speaking your name and he's saying it in a good way, you've got to feel pretty good about it.
So if I did a 53-man roster today, and I haven't done this complete exercise, There's a solid chance that I'm putting Isaiah Hodgins over it than more over Jay Kumerow. That's how he's going to make the team. To me, I think Isaiah Hodgins might push Jay Kumerow off this roster. Kumerow had a fumble. We know he's a special teams player. And Isaiah Hodgins, I think to specifically answer your question, Jeremy, I think he'd have to show he can handle enough on special teams. He doesn't have to do everything Jay Kumerow did. I think he'd have to handle enough on special teams to have them say, We get better at wide receiver by doing this, and we're not losing that much on special teams. To me, that's his path. I think this comes down to maybe a Hodgins versus Kumerow question.
803-0550. We'll get some calls in. Connect with our fans. Brought to you by the law firm of Gelber and O'Connell. We take your personal injury case personally. To John in Cheektowaga. John, good morning. You're on with Sal Capaccio.
Morning, guys. Yeah, Sal, the surprise for me, and I imagine a lot of people watching, was Blackshear. I hadn't even heard his name. You know, you've been saying nice things about Tavon Austin, and did he even play? I didn't see if he played at all, but
no.
Did you notice this Blackshear at all in any of the practices?
You know, he doesn't get a lot of run during training camp, during practices. That's because of the guys we just talked about, right? I mean, Devin Singletary, Zach Moss, James Cook. It's Tywan Jones gets sprinkled in there once in a while just because, you know, it is his position. Blackshear doesn't get a ton of run, but, you know, he made the most of his opportunities. Yeah, I can't see a path for him to make the roster. He's the new Antonio Williams, guys, right? When you think about it, right? I mean, remember Antonio Williams just, like, had that incredible game last year in preseason? Everybody's talking about him, but where would he fit on the roster? Now he's in New York, by the way, with the Giants and Brian Daboll. But I think that's what it is. You know, they've kind of replaced a nice practice squad running back to have a guy in your building working with your team. It's nice. I can't imagine if anybody is calling for, you know, not that the caller is, John, but if anybody's calling for Raheem Blackshear to make the team, well, who's not making it? He's not going to be over one of those top three running backs. That's the only way it could happen. I mean, he may have passed Duke Johnson on the depth chart. I don't know, you know, but that's it. I mean, I can't see it. He looked really good, though. It was a really nice night for him. I'm really glad that it seemed like he was okay after that scare, after that touchdown, because he played well and did a nice job. Out of the backfield, by the way, catching passes. He looked good in the open field.
Well, while we're on running back, I mean, we mentioned Moss might be a part of the offense now, not just even on the team. Singletary is entrenched. Cook is a draft pick. And Sal, I don't know, is there a way Duke Johnson carves a spot just as a returner with a big return on Saturday?
I don't think so, Joe. I mean, maybe because of injury to somebody, right? If something like that were to happen and they just feel like they need one. But I don't know. Look, I don't know if you guys know. Did you guys notice or take note at least of the very first kickoff return? It was James Cook. And then he didn't do it after that. And then punt returning was Khalil Shakir, right? I mean, as well. They have so many options, Joe. I think he'd have to offer them more to justify that sort of roster spot.
So actually, this might be a good comparable because I think it's been a comparison people have used, C.J. Spiller to James Cook over time. And how was Spiller used in his first year? Sal, you remember that they had Marshawn Lynch still on the roster and Fred Jackson. And Spiller, if I remember right, first few games of his career, he was pretty much only a returner. And then they trade Lynch. So, I don't know. I mentioned in the first hour, like, would someone give the Bills a fifth-round pick for Zach Moss? I'm guessing probably not at this point, but we've kind of gone from, it feels like we've gone from Devin Singletary, James Cook, and you've got two running backs to, I don't know, is there an argument to be made that five guys have a case? If Johnson were to do it by return, but I guess you're saying he probably
This wouldn't. Is the point of really kind of the onset of the conversation. They have a deep roster, right? I mean, they have guys that they've found in different ways fighting to make the team who are going to not make the team. This is why Brandon Bean every year seemingly somehow finds a player on his roster to trade for a draft pick, right? Whether it's, I mean, guys, he traded Russell Bodine for a draft pick one year, right? I mean, yeah. he last year it was Bam Johnson. I don't think they would, like, to me, Zach Moss on this team, I don't think they're going to look to trade him, but sure, I mean, if James Cook suddenly just makes a case that, oh my God, like, we got to have this guy on the roster, then maybe you think you get something more out of doing something like that for a guy like Moss, and that opens the door for one of these other running backs. But no, I think that really at the end of the day, what it comes down to is you just have a couple of guys that they can play in the league, but they're just not going to be able to make this team.
Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. So have we gone long enough to bring up Matt Araiza?
And Jeremy's plan to eliminate Gunners?
Yeah.
Just in general.
Sal, so it's the kick heard around the world, right? I mean,
all right, yeah.
Let's get your view, your rundown from field level, the sound it made when it hit his foot. No, you know, like Matt Araiza's 82-yard punt. It counts as 82 because they stopped counting at the goal line. I mean, it probably went 94 yards, and it's a net of 62, and it's exactly what the Bills are hoping to get from him, correct?
Right, and there's a lot of layers to this, right? You guys saw, I tweeted it out yesterday. I mean, I heard people about hang time and things like that. Oh, my God. You went from flipping the field from the 17 to the other team's 20. Every single coach would take that every time. I mean, the line of scrimmage is the 17. You went out there, and can you imagine? I mean, imagine this conversation. I'm sure it didn't happen because nobody knows he's going to hit it that far. But, hey, coach, mind if I put it in the end zone? Like, no, go right ahead. They'll start at the 20, right? I mean, like, go right ahead if you want to do that. Now, ideally, he said after the game, I asked him this. Like, is that, like, you okay with that, right? Put in the end zone. He looked and goes, ideally, you'd love it to stop rolling, of course. He said, but yeah, I'm fine with it. So by him saying that tells me, obviously, the coaches are fine with that. So my view was, generally, when they're at the 17 in that situation, I would generally be down there on that side. There was something else going on. There might have been an injury or something I was checking on. But either way, I happened to be over on the other side where the returner was, on that side of the 50. So I was more kind of near the returner than I was the play. And I said, okay, I'm just going to stay here for this punt. And I didn't hear it like that. Although now I think about it, like maybe I should have been listening for that, but I didn't hear it like that. But the first thing I noticed actually was the flight and the spiral. You know what I mean? Like sometimes those balls, because if you're going to pooch it, it's going to go end over end. If you're going to try and get a lot out of it, it's going to have that spiral. First thing I noticed was he just had great ball flight. Like the spiral of it, and the way it was moving to me, I'm like, oh my God, that's really nice. And then guys, it just kept going and going and going. I mean, it was like a missile, just kept going over. And I'm like, oh my God, this is crazy. And then I happen to look, and the returner just turns around and starts sprinting. And then you hear the crowd. And I can tell, the people in the crowd in the stands could probably tell better than I could of exactly how good of a punt it was from my level. Because I didn't see the ball coming down yet. I saw the returner just move and run back. And then you're like, oh my God, like, what is this? And, you know, you hear Murph and Eric in the broadcast and they're talking about it. And then all of a sudden it hits at what, the 15, starts bouncing. That's the next thing I'm thinking. After it hit, I thought to myself, oh my God, if they can down this thing, that would be the most amazing thing. And then, of course, it rolled the end zone. I was thinking the same thing. Like, that'd be incredible. So that's my vantage point of it. Look, I mean, That is exactly why you drafted Matt Araiza. That's exactly right there why you did it. Now, I will want to see him. I think we all should want to see him in a situation that he is asked to pin it in the 20, inside the 20. I want to see him in a situation where they're punting from midfield because that's going to be more of the test. Can he pooch it up in the air? Matt Hawk did that. Matt Hawk had a nice punt. He got him inside their 20. It was only a net of 32, I believe, not 62. But it actually effectively did the job even better, you might argue, because inside the 20. I would say no, because you flip the field so much. But that's exactly what he's going to have to do. Matt Araiza is in a situation show that he can do something like that. But, man, What a punt. It was great. And yet, I mean, it was on, like, what was I watching yesterday? The top 10, I don't know, a SportsCenter top 10, NFL top 10 plays of the evening. You know, Adam Schefter tweets it out. But, of course, you run through these comments from people, and seriously, people are like, yeah, well, you know, the hang time. And I don't know what you want. Hang time is different. Like, it's not like the running, like you said, the gunners. The gunners are sprinting to the ball because the return man. It's different if the return man has to turn around and run to the ball backward, essentially, going towards his own end zone. Then the hang time doesn't matter because you're mitigating all of that.
Well, all the other stuff is working around the net. The net is what matters the most.
Right, yes.
You know, hang time of 1 second or 20 seconds, what's the net of the punt? That's what you're trying to do.
Yes.
So I mean, not kidding. Did he make the team with that kick if he hadn't already made it? And did he make it with the holds? I mean,
yeah, well, I think Jeremy, he, I don't think there's any doubt he would make the team based on his leg, right? But I do want to see him with that kind of pooch, if you will. I think what really seals it is, so they both punted. Matt Araiza was the only one who held yesterday. To me, now maybe you get Matt Hawk punting next or holding next week. I mean, I would assume the reason why they only had Matt Araiza hold was to show that he can do it. And consistently, he had to do it like throughout the game. And he did. And he was good at it. And they won the game on a field goal. So I think it's going to be tough to keep this guy off the team, obviously.
Time for one more quick call. Doug in Tonawanda. Doug, good morning. You're on with Sal.
Morning, guys. Thanks for having me on. Sal, what I noticed on the broadcast on the sidelines, the excitement for the vets when the rookies and the younger guys are making plays. I mean, this really is a band of brothers and energy in a stadium for preseason. It's just amazing watching the little kids get excited. So I'm real excited for this season. I just thought you could comment about the sideline. Even that scrum on the sideline, on the Colts sideline, shows a lot of energy with these guys.
Yeah, listen, I noticed the same thing. And I talked to Micah Hyde about that during the game broadcast. And, you know, these guys, they go to practice every day with these guys, their teammates. They're in the same meeting rooms. They see how much they work. Micah Hyde was so excited for Jaquan Johnson and his interception, you know, and just said he works his butt off every day. He really deserves something like that. To see a guy like Terrell Bernard running, you know, down the sideline for a touchdown, and all the veterans, you know, getting so excited about it. That was really cool. So I agree, but, you know, that's where that comes from. Somebody asked me a good question on Twitter. Why did the veterans who aren't going to play, the starters, why are they still in uniform standing on the sidelines that they're not going to play? And the reason is simple, but it's a good question because people might not realize, well, they're still part of the team. And Sean McDermott, you know, wants them to still do everything the team does. They're just not playing. You know, it's not, they don't get a free day off in street clothes. It's, you're still part of the team. You're going to go through warmups. You're going to wear the uniform and you're going to be on the sidelines just like everybody else. So that's why they do it. Even though there's no plans on those guys playing, you're still going to see them in uniform on the sidelines.
Anything we didn't get to, Sal, that you want to before coming up today on the Extra Point Show?
No, I don't think so. I'm thinking back to my arrow up, arrow down. The penalty was called on the wrong guy. We know that, right? On the I had to change that because I remembered. The guy, who was it that had the block below the waist? It was Joe Giles Harris who did it, but Daniel Joseph was called for it right there. So that was one thing. I think that's about it.
All right.
Just trying to look through my notes here, but yeah, I think we covered everything. I think that Hodgins/Kumaro battle could be something, but who knows? Maybe they both want it. Yeah, here's one you didn't touch on. I think a lot of concern about Kyrie Elam was relieved after the game. Like people, we've been hearing some concern about Elam, you know, going into the game or, you know, from the last couple weeks of camp. I thought he played really well. That pass breakup on third down on the opening series, just a really nice play. He showed his length. He showed really, really good kind of patience to wait till the ball got to where it got. He did have a penalty, but I think Kyrie Elam acclimated himself very well in his first professional game.
Also, I was listening to pregame, your segment with Eric Wood, where he told his story about his first preseason game and his welcome to the NFL moment.
Oh, my God.
It was an incredible story. I loved it, and I just wanted to say, if anybody out there missed it, hopefully Eric can tell it again, because it was all about how he's a rookie and he was holding out because everybody was holding out and he didn't want to be holding out and blah, blah, blah. Like getting on the field and chasing down what? Was it an interception or a fumble?
Yep.
And he got a blindside block and lost a shoe
and a helmet.
And a helmet. Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
And he came back to the sidelines, and it was welcome to the NFL, rookie.
Yep, because he got lit up on a preseason chasing down a...
By the way, the kind of block that would be a penalty right now.
That's right. That's right. All right. Thanks, Sal.
You're welcome, guys.
Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. 803-0550 if you want to chime in. 1-8-1-8-550-2550. And Sal's coming up in the Extra Point with you, Joe, as we roll along. It's a victory Monday, Joe. We should be saying it.
A victory Monday.
It's a victory Monday.
Should Howard be picking the Bills this week because of a preseason win?
Tomorrow, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's right. It's a Tuesday, and we saw some things. So, I don't see why not. 803-0552, give us a call on WGR.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.